When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, everybody, we decided to take this week off, so here's one of our classic episodes. Hope you enjoy. Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Collin II, and with me via the interwebs or something is...
Matthew... Haas.
Did you forget your last name?
I was going to change it again, but I forgot what to change it to, so...
Oh, okay. That's not
good. Just gonna keep it.
Just keep it as Matthew Haas.
For now.
Okay. If you decide to change it any time during the podcast, let me know.
I probably will, so.
Okay. So today on our show, we're revisiting one of our favorite movies from the 90s. The 1998 teen comedy, Can't Hardly Wait. Which is a film that was directed by Deborah Kaplan and Henry Elfont, who also both wrote the script. And it stars a big ensemble cast that includes Ethan Embry, Charlie Cosmo, Lauren Ambrose, Peter Facinelli, Seth Green, Jennifer Love Hewitt, among a bazillion other people.
Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. We've just decided that we're going to venture down the road of some movies that are somewhat overlooked, but also good, you know? They're not, like, the most remembered from this time, but this one's pretty well remembered, though. I mean, it's got a pretty big cult following.
Yeah, this one is kind of... Well, it was kind of famous during its time as well when it came out.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it did make $25 million at the box office, which, for a teen comedy at that time isn't bad. Yeah,
98. This was before Not Another Teen Movie came out and all that kind of stuff, so.
Yeah, well, Not Another Teen Movie was making fun of this one in certain points, too, so.
Pretty much.
And this was kind of around the American Pie time and stuff like that, too, I think. Maybe right before it.
I think it was right before. Because American Pie came out in 1999, I think. And this came out the summer before, maybe like a year before. Which is interesting. You can sort of tell because, I don't know, it's got that 90s feeling again, kind of like with Bond Water. But Bond Water was more of like a kind of like art film type of kind of, but this is more mainstream.
Yeah.
But it really does have that like mid to late 90s kind of like, I like to call it basically like nostalgia before they're even having been nostalgic about something. It's kind of got like this, I don't know how to explain it.
It's almost like a throwback to in certain ways, like the John Hughes type films and stuff of that nature, but set in the 90s, you know.
Yeah, like, and I just want to say really quick, because before I forget, but you know, like I'll watch like movies from like the 70s or whatever, and like that whole theme will kind of feel like nostalgia to me, like, but like before my time, because everything came before my time. So like, you know, I'm hearing like, you know, music from like Jimi Hendrix or whatever, you know, and I'm like, oh man, like, you know, everything's set in the 70s or whatever. And then I watched, you know, this movie, and I'm like thinking like, oh, that song that they're playing came out the year that this movie itself came out as. And I'm sitting there thinking like, it's a totally different feeling for me, because like, I saw the movie and heard those songs at the same exact time in my life.
Yeah.
It had a totally different feeling than like watching like a movie from the early 70s that has like Jimi Hendrix in there, because both of those things are kind of retro to me at the same time. But at that time, though, that Jimi Hendrix song was only like 2 years old before it got in that movie or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, that's it's like it's funny, like with this, though, like the soundtrack is basically like, if I were to make a period piece right now for that time and create a soundtrack for the for that movie that I'm making about that time, I would probably just use this soundtrack.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, like Smash Mouth, they played two of their songs.
Hey, I mean, you got like Smash Mouth, Eve 6. There was like, I don't know, there was a bunch of different, you know, 90s bands in there from that time period. Blink 182, different things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Blink 182. Yeah, Eve 6. That was the beginning song in the intro.
Yeah.
Eve 6 song. And, of course, Barry Manilow, but that was the retro part for that movie.
Yeah.
Because that was, you know, Mandy. Okay, yeah. Anyway, I just want to throw that out. Oh, also, too, before I forget, because I must be doing like these weird, like, Inception-like things to myself without knowing about it, because, like, I was watching, you know, DC Stargirl, and then that gave me the idea to watch Blonde Water, probably, because they both have Luke Wilson. But also, watching Blonde Water gave me the idea to pick this one, because at the very end of the movie, both movies have a UFO floating above two people at the very end. I don't know if that was a 90s thing too or what, but
yeah.
And thought that was interesting. Don't worry, it's not a plot spoiler. It's got nothing to do with the movie. But
plus, Peter Facinelli was on Supergirl, so there you go.
Wait, he was?
Yeah, like the first season or something.
Oh, yeah. The like the really wealthy dude, right?
Yeah, he was like Lord or something was his last name, I think. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, plus he was also in The Big Kahuna. It's a really good movie.
Oh yeah, that's an awesome movie. Regardless of the fact that Kevin Spacey's in it.
Well, yeah, he's a piece of shit, but whatever.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey is a piece of shit. Yes.
Yep.
But that was a good movie.
It's a great movie. Danny DeVito's in it. The other guy is
Peter Facinelli.
There you go. Yes, him.
The guy we just
watched. Stuff.
Yep. Yep. Yes.
He's in a lot of good stuff. He's a great actor.
Yeah. He's probably best known for playing Carlisle Cullen in the Twilight movies.
Really? I never seen those movies, so I didn't know that.
I've only seen one of them.
Oh.
And that's all I'll see. Anyways, for the movie that stole my family name. Anyways,
pretty much.
Yes. Yeah. Damn them.
God, you know what? I wouldn't doubt it, though, because the author of those, I think it was the author of those books, pretty much stole, like, a bunch of, like, fiction stuff. Like, they were a part of, like, I think she was part of some, like, group where they'd like write like fan theories about stuff or whatever.
Well, I don't know. No, I've actually heard that 50 Shades of Grey started out as a Twilight fan.
Right. Yeah, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a totally different thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've heard about that. That story was like a weird like fan fiction of like just kind of whatever, scratch it. That was totally stupid. But
either way, she stole my family name. Anyways,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. So, this movie, it's pretty cool because I mean it deals with it takes place at a graduation party, a lot of you know, 80s movies and stuff, and then it's basically dealing with a lot of stereotypes though, but still.
Yeah, it was very dated. I noticed that about, like, it wasn't like lampshading either. It wasn't like winking at it. Like, it was like they weren't really conscious of the fact that, like, the whole, like, basically, like, the whole, like, Jennifer Love Hewitt character is, like, pretty much, like, she pretty much, like, exists, like, to be someone's love interest. Like their whole...
She has no personality whatsoever in the movie.
Yeah. She doesn't know, like, there's no offense to Jennifer Love Hewitt, but it's just, like, her character is very, like, just, like, a blank slate. Like, even how she looked, like, she's not smiling or frowning. It's just, like, a blank, like, you know...
I mean, at least we have Lauren Ambrose's character to actually have a female character who had a personality. What was her character's name? Denise.
Denise. Yeah, she's like kind of like the, like, I don't know what you call her. It's like the person who's not really a part of any kind of tribe in high school at all. She's just like her own person. Like, and she kind of has like elements of like a bunch of different various like alternative, like, clicks, but she's not part of any of them herself. Like, she's just her own, you know, her own person.
Yeah. Like most people really are.
Yeah, exactly. that's true.
I mean that's what I'm saying, because, I mean, there are cliques in high school, don't get me wrong. I belong to a couple myself, but the thing is, it was just kind of, well, mainly one, but, I was a theater nerd, but, the whole thing, it's like, basically, you know, within those groups, people have their own personalities. It's not like everybody that's a theater nerd is exactly the same, or everybody that's a goth is exactly the same, or everybody that's a, you know, jock is exactly the same. You know, it's just kind of, people have personalities.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But Jennifer Love Hewitt's character didn't. Anyways.
No, she didn't. She just...
She's like the least developed character in the whole movie.
It's all about her.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of, in a way. I mean, it's really about Preston, but it's revolves around his, again, kind of creepy obsession, because, I mean, I think about it, you know, he's been obsessed with this one girl. Like, if this movie was made right now, like, this could have been, like, some really, like, scary, like, incel story. Like,
oh, yeah.
It could have gone a whole different way. Like, you know, like...
Well, it's like a, it's like I was listening to, I think it was, who was it? I can't remember. There was a stand-up who was talking about it. He was talking about how you hear all these, like, stories about how your grandparents met. And it's like, well, I waited outside that bus stop for your grandma for 100 days and asked her to marry me every day. Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah, right now you would call the cops on that guy. But exactly. But people look back on that as a romantic story. But it's like, yeah, you basically willed your grandmother into submission to...
It's scary. You think about, well, most of us probably been... Well, most of us have literally would not have been here without, you know, rape or incest or... I mean, it's just fucking scary. Really.
I know.
And you wonder why the world's so messed up. Well, this is like all the sins of the past are upon us. And like, you know...
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, they need to get all bleak there, but...
But it's very true. I mean, but there are a lot. I do hear a lot of those stories. It's like, you know, I worked with your grandmother, and, you know, every day I would buy her a Hershey's Kiss. And then, you know, she kept saying, no, I don't like you. And then one day she just kind of gave in and said, yeah, let's get married.
Yeah.
And then you're like, yeah, that's kind of creepy. Grandpa, thanks.
It kind of reminds me of this joke that Jon Stewart, you know, from The Daily Show once said, where he was talking about, like, how, like, you know, like, his grandfather never really, you know, spoke that much or whatever. So, like, whenever you know, they'd be like having like family dinners or whatever, and he wanted to say something, like, you know, everyone would like get really quiet, you know, because, you know, they think he's gonna like, you know, tell some profound story or whatever. He'd just be like, you know, the Chinese are really sneaky. He's like, oh god, like, no. It's like, okay,
oh no. Grandpa, you're so cute. Wait, you know,
like, yeah, like, okay, let's go back, so.
Yeah. That's why Grandpa stays quiet all the time.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, good movie, though. Good movie.
Yeah, I mean, it's good for what it is, but there really isn't a lot of character development on a lot of these characters. I mean, because, like, basically, most of the characters are pretty one-note.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just my, you know, honest opinion. I mean, I love the movie, but it's just, you know, it's a movie of its time.
Definitely. I mean, Preston's kind of a one-note character, even though he's the main one. You got the stereotypical, you know, white guy who, quote, thinks he's black, which in and of itself is kind of racist because you're assuming that all black people talk the way that he's imitating, you know, so it's like,
yeah.
And it's like, wait, what are you saying then? Because that's kind of whatever. And then and then you got him and his two buddies who are just, like, so obnoxious about it. Like, at one point, though, they do drop the N-bomb, and then, like, the black people chase him away, so that was nice.
Yeah, at least they had that.
Yeah, at least they had that. Well, they didn't do the hard R, but it doesn't really matter.
Still.
yeah, it doesn't matter, really.
At least they had a commentary on it, sort of.
Yeah, a little bit. The record scratched that whole thing, you know, like...
Yeah. Then you have your stereotypical nerds.
Yeah.
You know, they love their Star Trek and their Star Wars. Which is funny. Which is funny because now everybody loves Star Trek and Star Wars. But anyways, we'll just...
Well, that's the Big Bang fact. This was pre-Big Bang. And it was pretty much... That's what that show was those three guys.
Basically. And it's just... Oh god, I hate that show. Anyways,
yeah.
Screw you for making me think of it. No, I'm joking.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, but you know, like, even in the credits, like, they obviously know that they're doing stereotypical people because people are named things like X-File Guy 1. X-File Guy 2, Girlfriend 1, Girlfriend 2, Girlfriend 3, Jock 1, right. Jock 2, you know, things like that. It's like, there's even a character in the credits named Ready to Have Sex Girl. And then the other one is Ready to Have Sex Girl's Friend.
No, that's kind of cool. A little bit of self-awareness.
Yeah.
I didn't catch that. I mean, I did catch the X-Files thing, but I thought that was because that's like what they were talking about.
Well,
was
yeah.
The X-Files.
Yeah.
It's
just funny. I'm just reading the credits here right now on Wikipedia, and it's just that's what they are. It's like.
Yeah. Good old X-Files. I missed that show. That was really popular during that time.
Yeah. That was right before it went off the air. I mean, like, a couple years or so before it did.
Yep.
I mean, there was even the line at one point where the two nerdy guys say to Charlie Carson's... William,
yeah,
his character.
Yeah.
That, you know, you kind of look like David Duchovny in this light.
He just kind of, like, he's, like, so, like, he feels so, like, heartworn by that. Just kind of,
yeah.
He's like, oh... Yeah, that's a good character. That's a good character, though. He's kind of a one-note character, but he's a little bit more in-depth, a little bit, though.
He at least has some development in there because he, you know, even though it's kind of giving you the message that to be cool, you got to drink.
Exactly.
Yeah, the more I think of this movie, Matt, I mean, I love it, but I'm just
saying. Oh, that's what we do. We're picking it apart, but that's what we do. I mean, we're not... I mean, anyone could just read Wikipedia and read a description. That's, you know.
Yeah.
Here we get the colorful commentary from Mike and Matt. So.
Yes. Who are they again?
I don't know, some guys.
Oh, okay. When do they start speaking?
They start speaking when the group of Italian businessmen offered to sell them half an emerald mine. Oh, sorry, that's a different podcast.
Okay. Behind the Bastards, yo. Sorry. Anyways,
I was listening to... Yeah. Now, I want to make sure that that was from Behind the Bastards. I don't want to take credit for that.
Robert Evans, you're our hero.
Yeah, good stuff.
Wait. No, I mean, I don't think we have to, like, go through the plot of this movie because it's kind of like we do normally, you know, because if you've seen the movie, you kind of do, but we, you know, you already know it.
We can just take about 30 seconds. Basically, Preston, you know, he was late for school one day, and then that was the day that she came to school for the first time. She, like, transferred from, like, a different school or whatever. And he thinks it's like a sign from God or whatever, because he was never late to school before or after, and they were both eating the same Pop-Tart, the same flavor, and somehow he thought that meant like they were fated to be together, and it never happened.
Which was like, I think, a strawberry frosted Pop-Tart, which is like probably the most popular flavor.
Exactly. It'd be one thing if it was like the really shitty, like, cinnamon or,
yeah,
or something,
some
like
weird
that.
One, yeah, but
brown sugar kind, like the worst possible kind.
Well,
like,
even those, you know, sell well. People like those for some reason. I don't, but I only like strawberry and chocolate. But
yeah,
it would be like if they got one of these, like, you know, weird limited edition flavors or something. But no, they were both eating probably the most popular Pop-Tart in the world.
Right. Yeah. Strawberry frosted. Yeah. Both. Both frosted and strawberry. And then the teacher, you know, asks if anyone would like to volunteer, you know, to basically, like, give her like a tour of the school, and he was gonna raise his hand, but then Mike Dexter, like the big jock, he gets to it first, so there you go. It's the whole plot of all the jocks always get the girls before the nerds, you know, type of thing. And yeah, they dated for all high school, but then he broke up with her right before graduation because he wants to be single while he's in college, so he can sleep with any woman that he wants to, basically. And then Preston's idea is that he's gonna hand deliver a fucking letter that he's been revising since freshman year in high school, which again is really creepy. Hopes that she'll read it, and then she'll want to, like, at least at the very least, go on like one date with him or something like that. Because he is, even though he is creepy, he's still genuinely a nice guy. Like, he's not the nice guy that will, like, turn on you if you say no. Like, he is sincere. He won't, like, you know, change personalities. Like, you know,
I don't know. His character wasn't really well developed, so we don't know.
Exactly. Maybe he would have. I don't know.
There's an alternate timeline where, you know, Jennifer Love Hewitt ends up in his trunk of his car or something. I'm just saying.
Yeah, the horror version of this movie. Hardly wait. It's got like this drone music in the background.
Can't hardly wait.
That would have worked, because then that would have led right into I Know He Did Last Summer, which she starred in the next summer, and then there you go. That'd be a continuum right there. So
I wonder if there's anybody out there, like, I think you could take clips from this movie and recut a trailer for it as a horror movie.
I'm sure you could. I mean, they did it for Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah, I might do that sometime. But if anybody else wants to do that and share it with us, please do. Or if you know of anybody that's already done it, please share it with us. Right. I would love to see that. That'd be awesome.
Please.
Yeah. So, then the plot goes from there where he's trying to, you know, give her this letter. And then what else happens here, Matt? I'm blanking.
No, you're good. A lot of stuff happens. A lot of filler stuff. There's a couple B plots, but like you got oh, what's his name? I forgot his name. Jesse, Seth Green's character. I forgot his name.
Scott. Kenny.
Kenny. Right?
Yeah, yeah, Kenny Fisher. Yeah.
Kenny Fisher. So he's determined to have sex before college. So it's like, it's kind of like a super bad thing, but it's just his B plot. And he's, you know, he kind of thinks he's all that, or he just pretends to think he is to impress people. And he's not having any luck. And right when he's about to, his buddies show up, and he wants to pretend like he's just chilling out. It's not too desperate. So, you know, they kind of you know, bust his balls a little bit. So then he just walks away from them, and then he's kind of sulking in his chair. And then he overhears this woman, you know, student, talk about that she heard a rumor that her boyfriend cheated on her. So she was gonna sleep with the next guy who even talked to her, not even hit on her. So then
I believe that was ready to have sex, girl.
That was probably what. Yeah, that's probably who it was. Ready to have. I bet you that's what it was. And who it was? Yeah, not one. It was. Oh, okay, that's
yeah,
that's
it was. Cool. It was Nicole Bilderbach is the actress's name. Just want to give her credit as a real name.
Exactly. Yeah, as a real person with a heart. And yeah, exactly. And, so he, of course, for comedic effect, like, you know, Chevy Chase falls off his chair right after she says that. And he, you know, jumps up and he's like trying to be all, you know, suave or whatever and impressive. And you know, she's like, you know, she's crying and stuff. And he's like, well, what can I do to stop you from crying? You're too beautiful to cry, all that kind of bullshit. So she's like, can you meet me by the pool house? And he's like, sure. But he wants to go to the bathroom to, like, make sure. Because he's got this whole, like, pleasure chest in his backpack that he's got, like, candles and, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So he wants to, like, you know, basically, like, prepare. Right after he leaves, she just goes, he'll do, you know, to her friend.
And then he's trying to get, basically, and here's where the B plot comes in, is where he's trying to go to the bathroom before this happens and prepare himself, and he ends up going to the upstairs bathroom after being allowed to by the host of the party. And then he's in there, and then at some point Warren Ambrose's character of why do I keep forgetting the character's name? Denise runs in there and then shuts the door behind her, and the door handle breaks off. So then they're locked in there together.
Yeah.
And hilarity ensues.
It's the bottle episode portion of the film. You know, they're stuck together. And of course, we find out that they used to be friends when they were kids. So this is like a conflict resolution type of, you know, aspect.
Yeah, probably the most character development in the whole film.
Yeah, it is actually. I'm kind of making fun of it, but it's like the only time we actually hear anything like, you know, emotional or just something that's like, you know, of a personal nature. And you know, we find out that Kenny, you know, actually was kind of like a nice kid, you know, when he was younger. He was, you know, he had a good heart and stuff, but, you know, when they went to junior high, he wanted to be cool, so he kind of just ditched her, you know, because she was, like, smart and, you know, nerdy or whatever, and didn't want to be associated with her.
And he was trying to be cool and really just became a, white guy trying to act like he was stereotypical black.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what she calls him on that he's like starts kind of reverting back to, you know, his normal self or who he was, you know, before. Which, you know, it's not easy, you know, because like when a person that crafts a persona for themselves, they do it long enough, that does kind of become a part of them. Even though it was like unnatural to begin with, like now,
oh yeah,
becomes natural. You know,
I mean, this isn't my real voice, so I don't know what you're, you know,
it's not.
No, I've crafted this voice over 40 some years. It's my real voice is more like this.
My name is Mark, but I had to change it.
because this just sounds weird. Like...
Sean Connery?
Sure.
Sure.
Moneypenny. Yeah. So yeah, no. But no, I mean, I know how it is. I mean, it's kind of like one of that thing where you either create a persona or like if you're hanging out with somebody for a while, eventually you start to talk like them.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you know, so then you become that way, and then that's just who you are for a while.
Exactly. But,
until you get around other people, and then you're like, wait, that's not me. I'm talking like that dude I was hanging out with this weekend, you know, that sort of thing. But,
yeah,
I don't know. But yeah, they basically end up, talking things out, and then eventually, he drops his persona. They both apologize for all the shit that they've done to each other over the years, and, kind of end up getting it on.
Let's get it on. Yeah, very, very awkward. Which again, though, this, you know, it's sincere.
It's realistic. It was
very realistic. It was, you know, it looked like, you know, like, oh, there's actually some kind of character development in this movie. Then it ends, and then they go back to, you know, William or whoever is getting drunk, and at one point, William becomes kind of like the life of the party because he is like a free spirit now because of all the alcohol he's drunk. And so the band that was going to be there, by the way, the band was hilarious. Just another C plot or whatever.
They never play.
Yeah, they break up before they even play because of creative differences.
Yeah, you have Donald Faison and Brecken Meyer are in that band.
Yeah.
Brecken Meyer, who is married to one of the screenwriter and co-directors of this film.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And also a 90s actor from that era. You know, you saw him in a lot of stuff during that time. Rat Race, well, that was kind of later, but...
Yeah. And, yeah, both Brecken Meyer and Donald Faison were in Clueless.
Yep. Yeah. And as was never mind. I thought the woman from Mom was in Clueless, but I don't think she was.
No.
Okay.
And she's not in this either.
She was one of the rich lady from Mom is in this movie, like the blonde woman who's like, she's sober. She's
oh yeah, the... her. I gotcha. Yeah, I thought you meant the mean actress. I thought you meant Anna Faris.
You probably listed Girlfriend 2 or Girlfriend 3. Or
yeah,
whatever.
She was. Yeah, Jamie Presley,
who you got Jamie Presley,
who was also on My Name Is Earl for years and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Joe Dirt, can't forget that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can. You can.
Yeah.
I have.
I actually like that movie. I like the first one, not the second one. I couldn't even watch all the second one. It was too terrible.
I never even started the second one.
It was bad. I couldn't get past like 15 minutes of it.
Maybe we should cover it for the podcast sometime.
Maybe we should.
Yeah, if you'd like us to, please message us and let us know.
Yeah.
If you want to just message us at all, because I'm lonely, just message me.
just send a message. Yeah, I message you all the time.
I know you do. I'm just saying, you know, come on, fans, message me. I'll send it off to Matt, too. You know, just message me. It's mike@cullenpark.com. You know, just...
Yeah, we'll do a CC conversation, you know, like... We'll
yeah.
Yeah.
Just, you know, we'll talk to you.
Yeah.
You know? The world's a lonely place, Matt.
It is so lonely.
Okay. Anyways, So William at one point gets up on the stage then, and he starts singing Welcome to the Jungle.
No, Paradise City.
Oh, Paradise City, that's right. Why am I thinking Welcome to the Jungle? Yeah, anyways, I mean, the same band.
They're both,
but yeah.
They're both hits.
Yeah. Yeah, he was singing Paradise City by GNR. Guns N' Roses for the uninformed. just letting you know. So that's basically what happens there. And then he gets up there. Yeah.
He makes out with two or three women at once, I think, because they all, for some reason, they didn't really quite explain why. Well, they did it later on because they were like measuring his genitalia area from his pant outline. But that was even before that. They were like, they didn't really explain why were they suddenly obsessed with this guy. That was whatever. Okay, I don't think they thought that one through, but whatever. And,
no. There's yeah, I mean, it was interesting, but I don't know what I'm saying, but anyways, yeah, they and then eventually he ends up kind of befriending that night Mike Dexter, who he had gone he had gone to the party with his nerdy friends. And they were waiting for him up on top of the pool house to attack Mike Dexter and then take Polaroids of him with one of his friends naked after they chloroformed him. Yes.
Kind of a homophobic type of undertone of,
Yes.
Look, you picture with a guy. Get it?
Yeah.
98.
Yeah, and back to the when they were singing, something I noticed when William was singing, there's a line that he's singing along with the song. It's from the song. It goes, "Captain America's been torn apart. Now he's a court jester with a broken heart." Right when that happens, they cut to the girls that are like obsessed with him in the crowd. The one girl is wearing a Captain America shirt.
Wow,
like it's a shirt with the shield on it.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if that was intentional, but I just noticed it, and I thought it was interesting.
Probably, it could have been, or it could have not been either.
Yeah.
It depends.
Just a coincidence, and it might not even be a Captain America's shield, but it looks just like the shield. It's the star, yeah. Star with the circles around it and everything. Yeah. So, only a nerd like me would notice that. But, but anyways, it ends up being that William and Mike both get chloroformed by the guys. And the Polaroid's taken of them, and then they realize, wait, that's our friend.
Right.
This is after the party's been broken up by cops.
Yeah, of course, the obligatory cop scene,
Because every party that you have in high school gets broken up by cops.
Yeah. Exactly. They're like, we got to break up all these house parties. We got a long night ahead of us.
Every party.
Every party. It's a lot of parties. It's a lot.
Yep. Good times, man. I mean, I remember all those parties I went to in high school. Wait, I can't lie. I didn't go to a lot of parties in high school. They were just like... they were mostly cast parties for plays I was in.
I went to like maybe one. I wouldn't even call it a party. It was more of a get-together. It wasn't so much of a party.
Yeah, but all those cast parties I went to, the cops never came.
No?
No. Especially since most of the cast parties I went to, the parents were there, and we were just hanging out in their basements and stuff, and nothing, nothing going on.
You kids.
Yeah. We were just hanging out in the basement, drinking orange soda. It was nothing, it's just the way it goes.
Right. The way it goes.
So,
I don't know why I did that.
Just the way it goes. So, yeah. if you'd like to buy the soundtrack to our show, give us money. Yeah, give us money to record it. Anyways,
yeah, do it.
go to our Patreon. The next thing that happens basically is party's over. It's the next morning. I didn't miss anything else, did I? I mean, besides that, I mean, there was a run through joke with Melissa Joan Hart trying to get everybody to sign her yearbook, but also
we're forgetting a few things. For one thing, Preston, he's going to give Amanda the letter, right? But right at the moment he was going to give it to her, Amanda's cousin like forces himself upon her and kisses her, but he thinks that she's making out with this guy. So then he like leaves the party, and then he's gonna go and he's listening to the radio, and it says like it's Barry Manilow's birthday, and that's why they're playing the song all the time. So he kind of feels sad that it wasn't like a sign from God. I'm like, really? What you really thought was a sign from God? But anyway, so but then the DJ's like,
didn't you know that's how God works?
Yeah, well, apparently.
God owns all the airwaves.
Actually, is that a song? Is that a song lyric or not?
No, but it should be.
Oh, okay, I was gonna say it actually sounds like a good song lyric. Thank God. But anyway, that reminds me that there actually is a quasi spiritual. Because I know you like to research cults and stuff. You might like this. It's a group called Ekinkar. Ekinkar or something like that. I forgot how to spell it. But it was like popular in the 70s or whatever and stuff. They're not really big now. But like one of their things was like told like its members to kind of like basically to kind of see every type of coincidence as though it was like some like metaphysical sign. So like if you hear like the same song on the radio 2 days in a row that like meant something, like, you know, or like the moment you turn on the radio and that particular song lyric, you know, like all this kind of stuff like that. So like,
huh,
you know, that's kind of what he was doing. He was basically practicing this. Why am I, I'm like getting too obscure here in this podcast.
It's okay, Matt. It's all right.
I mean, we're talking about Can't Hardly Wait. I'm talking about fucking Ekinkar.
It's a natural
process. But anyway, it is for me.
Anytime you talk about a 90s movie, you end up talking about a random cult. Because every time I talk about, you know, Clerks, somehow I end up talking about the Source family. I mean, it's just this weird thing, right? That it,
as one does.
You know? Yeah. Wait. What?
What? I really need to buy the emerald mine, though. I got to get rich so I can just study holds.
So, the whole, I don't know, like, basically, though, he has this letter, you know, obviously. He ends up throwing it away after he sees her being molested by her cousin in a teen comedy.
Through marriage.
Still.
I know. That's what he said. Oh, God, you're not going to tell my parents about this, are you? Like, well, yeah, maybe.
Yeah, so then he ends up throwing the letter away in the trash out front. There was that Melissa Joan Hart's character's yearbook got thrown away, so she went out into the trash to look for the yearbook, ends up turning on fate by doing this. The letter falls out of the trash. Somebody has gum on their shoe and it sticks to that, and then it gets stuck to a beer keg, and then eventually it lands into a snack bowl in front of Amanda, Jennifer Love Hewitt's character. Like it does, you know.
Like it does.
Yep.
And the soundtrack to that too, they're playing Smash Mouth, Walking on the Sun, or not Walking, yeah, is that what this called? Walking on the Sun?
Maybe, I don't
remember.
I don't remember that part.
Yeah, that's the song, the instrumental. Not
oh, okay, your gotcha.
Instrumental. And it's just kind of, I like that though, because that music really fits with like that whole scene. I thought that was really cool, seeing what the letter getting back to Amanda, and she's just sitting there, you know, doing her thing, pouting with her arms crossed, because the director was like, all right, we're just gonna let you be seen and not heard this movie, so you know, that's what we're paying you for, so it's, you know, it's Hollywood for you, it's, you know.
And we're gonna put you as the main character on the poster.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, so eventually she finds that letter and then is going to look for Preston and asks around everybody if they know who Preston is. Talks to a couple of stoned guys.
A young Jason Segel before Freaks and Geeks and before, you know.
Yeah, maybe right around the same time as Freaks and Geeks, because that was right around there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also after SLC Punk, I think. Or right before it. Right around the same time. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're basically talking about, you know, that he's a guy with hair who's kind of tall. He sometimes wears t-shirts.
I love that scene. It's like, he's like, you know, he's kind of tall, you know, right? She's like, all right, so he's kind of tall. He's sort of tall. He's like, kind of. Like, he has to correct her. Like, no, not sort of. He's kind of tall. Come on, you got to understand. You want these hothead conversations.
Yeah, so she goes looking for him, and then while she's looking for him, Mike tries to get back together with her after having a conversation with Jerry O'Connell in a cameo role.
Yep, Sliders fame, and as well as, you know, a bunch of other bullshit.
Stand By Me.
Scream 2?
Yeah.
Or was it Scream 3? No, I forgot which one. Was it Scream 3?
He was in 2, I think.
He was 2, okay, yeah.
And then... And then also, you know, he was in Jerry Maguire, you know, different things.
Right.
Married to Rebecca Romijn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool.
Formerly Rebecca Romijn Stamos.
Oh, that one.
Yeah. So he you know, he stole a girl from John Stamos. Not too many guys can say that.
I like it when you mention when a guy is married to a famous woman, you know, because usually it's the other way around. We're like, oh, she's married to,
yeah,
you know, someone like that's her whole identity. You flipsy man, like just like the Spider movie, like you're like a proto feminist man, and you flip it on its head, like, no, he's married
to Rebecca Romijn.
Exactly.
Yes. Who people know from the X-Men movies and Star Trek Discovery and The Librarians and other things. She's
Librarians, yeah.
Yes.
I still gotta pick it. I gotta check that show out. I've never seen it.
It's good. I need to finish it. Yeah, anyways, and that was one of the other cameos though is Jerry O'Connell.
He plays like this washed up football star or whatever, this popular guy who's
a freshman in college.
He did the same thing that Mike Dexter did. He broke up with his girlfriend because he wanted to be free or whatever, and he's basically like the cautionary tale of like, this is what happens, you know.
Yeah, because that's how it happens. Wait.
Yep. That's the other thing too. So like, if you don't have a girlfriend, then your life is just completely shit, which again, that's kind of like a stereotype, because then that kind of like, on the one hand, that kind of makes men like look like really sloppy, but like in a really weird, insidious way, it also kind of still puts women in like the role of caretaker, like, oh well, they'll fall apart without me, so I need to drop everything to, you know, take care of this guy or whatever. Like,
interesting little tidbit though. Jerry O'Connell is younger than Peter Facinelli.
Oh really? Wow.
It's like, yeah, it's like a year, but still.
Well, they probably made him look like drunk and just kind of unkempt.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, they were all, you know, everybody was like in their 20s back then anyways, playing teenagers, so.
Exactly.
Not a single teenager in this movie, I'm sure. So,
the only one that looked like it could have been a teenager was Jennifer Love Hewitt, but I don't think she was either at that time. Probably not.
Probably not. She was...
It was 98. Was that her first movie?
No, she was in a... She has been acting since she was, like, child, I think.
Oh, okay.
She was... Yeah, no, she started back in 89 on the TV series Kids Incorporated on Disney Channel.
Okay.
And then she was in, you know, like, Party of Five and, yeah.
Oh, okay.
She's done a lot. I mean, her first movie was Dance Workout with Barbie. In 1992.
Wow.
And then she was in a movie called Munchie.
Munchie?
Yeah. Then in 93, she was in Sister Act 2. She was in the movie House Arrest. We got to watch that for the podcast. Have you ever seen the movie House Arrest?
Wait, she was in House Arrest. Wait.
Yeah.
What is that movie about? That sounds familiar. What is that?
It's a movie where basically these kids kidnap their parents.
Yeah, I remember that movie.
Yeah, and it takes place in Defiance, Ohio.
I can imagine that town sucks.
But it's also a term, you know, basically I think it's a play on the fact that it's Defiance. Yeah.
Right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to be. I just driven through there a few times. There's like nothing.
Yeah.
There's some fast food restaurants and, you know. Like,
yeah, and I know what you did last summer was the same year as this movie though too. Anyways.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
They do have a Captain D's though fish place, so that's cool. Because they don't have Captain D's here anymore in Toledo. That pissed me off. So if you want Captain D's, you can go to Defiance. If you live like in the Ohio, you know, northwest area, take about an hour to get there, but get yourself some Captain D's. So there's that.
Sorry. Or you could just eat something else. Anyways, I'm so positive. Anyways, I don't like seafood. So, back to the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
There is no Captain D's in the movie either, so.
No, not. There's a
restaurant, but it's kind of like a big boy knockoff called Johnny's or something like that. So,
yeah, that's where they hang out, you know, the next morning.
So, basically, anyways, that letter ends up getting to, Peter Facinelli's character, Mike Dexter, tries to get back together with, Julia, with Jennifer Love Hewitt's, I almost said Julia Louis-Dreyfus, that's different. They're different people.
Amanda.
They're different people, yeah. Right? No, which...
Yeah, they're very much different people.
They both have like three names. Yeah, but Jennifer Love Hewitt's character, and he tries to get back together with her, and she basically just tells him off in front of everybody. And then, you know, a very insensitive thing, which I had to rewind to make sure I heard, some random girl in the crowd yells out fag.
Yeah, everyone cheers and laughs at that. It's like, ah, ha, ha. He's gay because
he
tried to get back with this girlfriend and she said no, so that makes him gay.
That's how it works. Huh? That's how it works.
I didn't understand the logic of that. I mean, it's still a bad word no matter what, but I just don't even understand. Like, I don't get it. Like, you know.
Well, it's like, I think it was Kumail Nanjiani was talking about, like, when he was in high school, he had like a backpack that was kind of pink. But so because he had this pinkish backpack, everybody called him gay.
Okay.
And his response was, it's not pink, it's salmon. And somehow that made him more gay. In their eyes.
Because he knows the exact... Yeah.
But, yeah. But that's just the way kids are. They just...
Yeah, you know, they are.
I mean, I had blonde, natural blonde highlights in my hair, and kids in grade school called me fogey. Like old fogey. Because they thought it was gray hair. This is when I was in, like, the 7th grade or 6th grade or something, you know? So it's just how kids are. I'm not bitter about that at all.
Wow. It's okay. It's okay.
It's fine. They called
me old fogey, Matt.
That's such a weird...
Like, I know.
Like what old fogey would do, would call someone a fogey. Like,
yeah,
know?
That's what they called me. They would just call me fogey. And I'd just be like, what the fuck?
What the fuck are you talking... I had people that would tell me weird shit, too. I don't even remember half of it anymore, but it was like, where do you guys come up with this stuff? Like... I don't get it. But, yeah, so they call him the F word, then they all laugh. But also, too, we're forgetting when Preston, he's going to go try to call Barry Manilow from the DJ, from the radio station, because he wants to ask him what the meaning of Mandy is, because Denise told him it was about his dog.
Yeah, and he has so random encounter with an angel.
Yeah, played by, what's her name?
Jenna Elfman.
There you go, yeah. Mm-hmm. From Darby and Greg at that time, and around that time.
Yes. who is only a couple years older than Peter Facinelli. I just had to point that out.
I mean, it looked like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a dancer. You know, he calls her a stripper. She corrects him and says that she's a dancer. And of course, you know, again, it's late 90s, but I do notice this shit now as I watch older movies. Like what character is centered and, like, whose needs are centered more than others type of thing. So, like, and, you know, that just could be just me just getting older and growing up a little bit. But, like, so, like, you know, she had a really bad night at the club. I mean, like,
yeah,
40 men were groping her, grabbing her butt, which, again, you know, just because you're at a strip club doesn't mean that you just do whatever you want. There are rules, and, you know, they just decided that there weren't any rules, you know, when it came to her. And so she just wanted to go home, and her car broke down, and he's making the whole thing about himself, and then... You know, she says one little thing about, you know, that kind of, you know, upsets him. And then he, like, you know, becomes all sad and like, oh, you're right, I am a total loser. And then she then has to, like, you know, basically, like, you know, succor him. You know, it's like, objectively, she's got the worst, you know, night going on.
Yeah, but I mean, in all fairness, the movie's about him. I'm not trying to downplay a woman's plight because I... honestly think that that's important, but what I'm saying is maybe she's having her own little movie somewhere.
Yeah, true.
And this is just a side scene in her movie.
Yeah, I know, side scene, exactly. Yeah.
I don't know, but anyways, she basically tells him, you know, sets him straight about love and stuff like that, and tells him to go out and get Barry Manilow. And
I love that part. You go call Barry Manilow and tell him how you feel.
Yeah, because she had a crush on Scott Baio.
Yeah, which is unfortunate for how he turned out to be. But
yeah. Kevin Spacey, Scott Baio.
Well, I'm pretty sure Kevin Spacey's worse than...
Yeah, I'm going to say that, too. Just because Scott Baio likes Trump doesn't mean he's a...
He's worse.
He's not a pedophile. He's not an accused pedophile like Kevin Spacey.
Right.
So I'm just kidding.
Right, exactly.
Just want to make that clear.
Politics suck, but
I'm not gonna say anything. I don't think I don't. But actually, no. Wait. He did get accused of. Yeah. Anyways, so.
Oh, he did. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
He did get accused of some stuff when he was on Charles in Charge.
Oh shit!
From when he was, yeah, by Nicole Eggert. So, anyways,
Hi, Paul. Well, fuck you, scab.
Yeah. So, yeah. And these are all accusations, people. I'm not saying any of this is true about either Kevin or, right. or Scott. So, yeah. So yeah, the but anyways, basically, he ends up letting it go basically in the end because he comes back to the party and tries to tell her how he feels because she's looking for Preston. But at this point, every guy at the party is trying to sleep with her.
Right.
Because that's what you do right after somebody breaks up with their boyfriend.
Well, of course, if it's Amanda Becker, of course, apparently.
Well, yeah.
Somehow.
Well, it is Jennifer Love Hewitt in the 90s. She was like one of my first crushes. Anyways, not first, probably one of my major crushes in high school. But but yeah. But she has such a great personality. And in the movie.
In this movie. Yeah, this movie.
So basically we've got him telling that, and then he tells her, and then she basically just tells him off because everybody else has been trying to get with her too. So
right.
Then we fast forward a little bit, Kenny and Denise had sex. Denise is coming to say goodbye to Preston in the morning at the restaurant. They say goodnight, give me goodbye and everything, and he makes fun of her for getting with Kenny.
Huh.
He leaves to go to the bus station because he's gonna head off to go somewhere to meet Kurt Vonnegut. And then Amanda Becker meets him at the bus station. And they kiss and they get together. And everything is happily ever after, and the two nerds get beamed up into space.
Yeah, somehow. And then,
like it happens in these movies.
Yeah, this weird brown water, it happens at the... Well, at least they mentioned UFOs at one point in that movie to make sense of it. Well, I guess they did X-Files. I guess that kind of was a...
Yeah.
You know, whatever, precursor or something, but...
Oh, this was actually... Okay, here's some trivia about this movie that we can end things with here. This is actually the film debut of Jason Segel.
Oh.
Did not know that. So it must have been right before SLC Punk.
Yeah.
I'm assuming. This was Charlie Cormos, who played Williams, first and last on-screen appearance since Hook in 1991.
Huh.
So, yeah. He was attending MIT when he was offered the role. I know he went on to... like work, I think, in politics or something.
Which guy?
Charlie Cormos, who played William.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he did. Yeah, he did go to MIT. Melissa Joan Hart was filming Sabrina the Teenage Witch at the same time, so she had to take the small part of Yearbook Girl. She took B12 vitamins to stay energized during the all-night shoots and admits that Jennifer Love Hewitt was skeptical when she offered them to her because she was convinced they were drugs. Ethan Embry claims to barely remember filming this movie because he was so stoned the whole time. As I said before, Breckenmeyer is married to Deborah Kaplan, one of the co-writer, co-directors of the film in real life. And he is also uncredited in the movie. He doesn't get credit for some reason. The title is a reference to the song Can't Hardly Wait by the seminal 80s rock band The Replacements.
There's no songs from them in the movie, though, is there? Are there Replacements?
I think they might have it at the credits. I'm not sure, though.
Okay.
At one point, there's a distance shot showing someone doing flips in the party's yard. That's actually Ethan Embry. In addition to acting, he was an award-winning gymnast from a very young age.
Oh, wow.
Adam Han Bird was originally cast as William, but after a couple of days of filming was let go and replaced by Charlie Cosmo. One shot of him is left in the film, but he is carrying a ladder and his face is not visible. This is the same actor. What's that?
I saw that guy.
No, did you? Yeah. His most famous role was Little Man Tate, that actor. But yeah, but he, I guess it didn't work out, so they replaced him. The fraternity on Trip McNeely, that is Jerry O'Connell's character's polo shirt, is Delta Iota Kappa, which is Dick.
Wow.
Four of the cast members appeared on the television series 6 Feet Under, Lauren Ambrose, who is one of the main actors on it, Freddie Rodriguez, Peter Facinelli, and Eric Belafor. Ethan Embry's character, Preston Myers, confesses to be a big fan of Kurt Vonnegut Jr. At the end of the movie, his yearbook quote is, "Beware of all enterprises that require new clothes," by Thoreau. And this is also featured in Vonnegut's book, Welcome to the Monkey House. Stoner guy talks to watermelon guy about Velma from Scooby-Doo and says she was a hip lady. In the movie Dazed and Confused, the stoner Slater says the exact same thing about Martha Washington.
Wow.
At one point, Denise says, "Don't look back, you should never look back." This is a quote from Don Henley's song Boys of Summer, which was released in 1984.
Wow.
The film takes place on Wednesday, June 17th, 1998, which is Barry Manilow's 55th birthday. Ethan Embry has never seen the movie the whole way through and didn't even read the entire script. He only read the scenes his character appeared in. William Lichter was supposed to take a shot of tequila, but to maintain the PG-13 rating, they had to digitally replace the tequila glass with a lemon in post-production.
Huh?
Weird. I gotta rewatch that movie and see if I can notice that. This is actually the film debut of a Melissa Joan Hart as well. Marisol Nichols appears in this movie, and she had previously played the sister to Ethan Embry in Vegas Vacation the year before. Yeah,
that's right.
I love Vegas Vacation. That's a good movie. Stoner guy makes reference to Velma from Scooby-Doo being underappreciated and hot, and watermelon guy agrees with him. Jason Segel was actually dating Linda Cardellini at the time, who would go on to play Velma in the Scooby-Doo movies. Interesting. The film features Blink-182's song Damn It, and while watching this film, lead singer and bassist Mark Hoppus, or Hopus, whatever it is, was also inspired to write the song Going Away to College.
Eh.
Okay. Jenna Elfman makes an uncredited cameo as Angel Stripper, who actually cites herself as a dancer. In real life, Elfman is a classically trained ballet dancer. While filming the final scene of the party meant that there was a chaotic destruction of the house, the directors gave the go-ahead to completely trash the place. This involved the cast and crew pulling out drawers, dropping food all over the floor, messing up the carpets, and someone spray painting "This party sucked" on the front door. This all happened in 1 hour. Jennifer Love Hewitt gave Ethan Embry a teddy bear full of breath mints for their climactic kissing scene. He says everyone on the set knew he spent most of the time smoking pot in his trailer, and she wasn't too keen on kissing Embry, who described himself as a skunk scented chimney. He said he gladly used the breath mints as they alleviated his cotton mouth.
Wow.
That's hilarious. Okay.
Yeah, I like how he was like the actual stoner in real life, but he plays like a straight laced, some type of dude.
Yeah. That's funny. He comes off like a stoner in real life, though, so it makes sense.
Oh, okay.
When I've seen him interviewed. But anyways, that's neither her nor there. Final thoughts on this movie here, Matt.
I just think it's good. It's funny. It's a good fun movie to watch, like by yourself or like with some buddies or whatever. You don't really have to think about it too much. It's not really a deep movie in any sense of the word. It's just like, just kind of like a slice of life story, kind of like Gone Water is, but more mainstream. It's definitely not like that movie. But
yeah, I like it. I think it's a good time capsule of its time, as opposed to a time capsule of another time.
Yeah, exactly.
Wait,
it's not like, making sandcastles in sand, it's just like...
Yeah. or like how water is very wet. And,
yeah.
Wait. I highly recommend the movie. I think it was great. One thing, before we go, I've got I'm going to put some links. I got to find a couple, and I already have, but by the time you listen to this, ways that you can help out people right now. I'm going to put them on a few of our recent episodes. People out because of COVID-19, and also ways that you could help out people that are currently protesting the inequality in this country right now, through Black Lives Matter and things of that nature, and ways to help, people through like the Innocence Project and things of that nature, because there's a lot of shit going on in this world. And I think that any way I can help, I'll donate myself. But the thing is like, if you want to donate, please just check out the links and do so. I mean, if you don't trust us, research the whatever we share of yourself. And if you don't want like those, just help out, some kind of charity in any way you can, just because it's a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So, anything else before we go, Matt?
Nope. Actually, maybe I'll play us out, maybe. Is that good?
That's good with me.
Okay. So this is a tuning that my youngest niece did to my guitar when she broke in, and she took my guitar and she just started. She's only 3 years old, mind you. And this is what it sounds like. Got some interesting progressive rock type of King Crimson tuning here, and I've been trying to write a song with it, and it's definitely definitely different. It's not for like mainstream ears, but hopefully not too grating on the ears. So
you need to name it after your niece.
I will. So I'll just give this a little whirl, and we'll see where it goes. All right.
Thank you, everybody. Talk to you later. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 Podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Joey Galvez. I want to tell you guys a little bit about the Department of MetaHuman Affairs. This one is a story about a team led by a retired sidekick, two felons, a failed actor from Broadway, and a reprogrammed cyborg. But their first mission is to stop the criminals who have robbed a bank, and they will have to set the world at ease. You're going to get 180 pages of entertainment, action-packed awesomeness right here in the first 6 issues in a collected hardcover volume 1. All you gotta do is head on over to kickstarter.com and type in the Department of MetaHuman Affairs or DMA and check it out right now.